John chapter 4, verse 46 to 53. Once more, he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine. And there was a certain royal official whose son lay sick at Capernaum. When this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son, who was close to death. "Unless you people see miraculous signs and wonders," Jesus told him, "you will never believe." The royal official said, "Sir, come down before my child dies." Jesus replied, "You may go. Your son will live." The man took Jesus at his word and departed. While he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. When he inquired as to the time when his son got better, they said to him, "The fever left him yesterday at the seventh hour." Then the father realized that this was the exact time at which Jesus had said to him, "Your son will live." So he and all his household believed.
We must have traveled about 20 hours, I think, yeah, about 20 hours of travel and probably a distance of around 15,000 kilometers to find myself standing right in the place that we've heard about in the Bible. This is a biography written of Jesus by a man named John. So when I refer to John, I'm talking about the biographer who writes about Jesus. 20 hours of travel, 15,000 kilometers later, and I'm standing in Galilee, the place where this episode in the life of Jesus happened. But there'd been a problem with my plane. The plane, though it had reached 88 miles per hour, did not have a flux capacitor, nor was it fitted with weapons-grade plutonium, so it couldn't generate the 1.21 gigawatts of power that is required to power a flux capacitor to make time travel possible. I'd achieved the goal of bridging a 15,000-kilometer issue with a 747, but I was 2,000 years too late. And as I stood in Galilee, I was surrounded by amazing things, and I'm here seeing where Jesus had walked and where episodes like this one had transpired. But I was 2,000 years too late, and I was confronted with the very same problem that I think affects followers of Jesus, believers in Jesus, and even non-believers in Jesus. And that is, how is it possible to believe? How is it possible to have faith at such a great distance? Let's say the 747 fixed the 15,000 kilometer problem, but there was nothing we could do to solve the 2,000 year problem. I was still at such a distance. And how can you have faith when you can't see and when your belief is taking place at such a great distance? If you've ever felt this issue, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, I want to say that we are in a great place in the Bible today. Because in John chapter 4, as we just heard this episode where a royal official comes and meets Jesus because his son is terribly ill and on the brink of death, he is a man who will be forced to believe at a distance. Now, as John, the biographer, starts to write this story, he immediately asks us to have a flashback. As you'll see on the screen, from John 4:46, once more, Jesus has traveled into this place called Cana in Galilee, where he turned the water into wine. Now, if you're thinking, what? Water into wine? That was the first sign Jesus did. And if you want to hear more about what that is all about, go to the website, listen to Keith Baker, and he'll teach you all the details of Jesus turning water into wine. But let me give you a real summary, because John wants us, as we think of this story, to have that story in mind. On the next slide, we go back to John chapter 2. After John has told this story of turning water into wine, he summarizes the episode like this. He says, "This is the first of his miraculous signs Jesus performed in Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him." John wants us to have this in mind as we consider the story we've heard today. Because by considering Jesus' first sign, the changing of water into wine, it emphasizes us and helps us see the amazing thing that happens to this royal official, where he will in fact believe from a great distance. Because consider the two things that are going on. In the first story, the disciples put their faith in Jesus, in the water to wine story. In the healing of the son, this royal official is going to put his faith in Jesus. But the royal official, in so many ways, is a man who must believe from a great distance. In the first story, who is it that puts their faith in Jesus? Disciples. Disciples are people who have been handpicked by their rabbi. Earlier in this biography, in the first chapter, Jesus actually handpicks these guys. Come follow me. And it's not just like going to university. When you become a disciple, you are kind of joined with your rabbi. You live with him. You do what he does. You go where he goes. And essentially, you're trying to be like him. There's a tight allegiance. Well, these disciples who are tightly joined with Jesus, they put their faith in him even further after they see him change water to wine. But in our story today, it's not a disciple. It's a royal official. Now you might think, so what? A certain royal official? Why do we need to know that? Well, because by being a certain royal official, it tells us something about his proximity to Jesus. See, as a certain royal official, it is most likely that this man was not joined to Jesus, but was in fact joined to a man called Herod Antipas. Now, if ever there was a rival of Jesus in this time, a man who also would aspire to be the great king, it was Herod. And so this man, by affinity, is a great distance away. The disciples, they hang with Jesus. This man, he is with Herod. But in his desperate situation, he comes to Jesus because he's heard something about Jesus' power. Now consider the two miracles. When Jesus turned water into wine, what happened was there was a wedding. They ran out of water. Jesus turns the water into wine. And as you'll see in the Bible verse there, he revealed or displayed his glory. It's a visual miracle. Jesus turns water into wine. The disciples and others at the wedding see it before their eyes and come to greater faith. The royal official, a distance by affinity, does not have the same privilege of seeing a miracle before him. Whilst the disciples will see, this man is going to hear. And he's going to hear of something not yet done. He hears of a promise when Jesus says to him, "Go on your way, your son will be well." Now at this point, the man takes Jesus at his word, practices faith or belief from a distance, and he goes. Both people in both stories come to faith. Disciples who are close by affinity, who are close by seeing the miracle, come to faith. And in the second story, a man who we can probably relate to a lot better, at a distance, both by affinity and by geography, also comes to faith. Now you might be tempted at some point as you read this story to go, wow, so Jesus can heal at a distance. That's fine. Say, wow, Jesus can heal at a distance. But I don't think that's what John wants us to wow about. See, John's biography is all about heaven meeting earth. It's about the wonder that God has come to be amongst us in flesh, in Jesus. He is saying God is very near. And John, like all the Bible writers, and many of you know, that God has been doing miracles and magnificent things from heaven by remote control forever. And so even though this miracle stands out a little different because Jesus is not there in Capernaum where the sick boy is, he does this from a distance, it's not can Jesus heal at a distance, it's can the royal official believe at a distance? Can he, without the privilege of seeing, can he, despite being in cahoots with Herod, put his faith in Jesus? And the cool thing about this story, cool as in it stretches into eternity cool because this man, his family's eternity has changed, is that yes, he can. But I wonder if there's a part of you saying, how? How did he make that decision to put his faith in Jesus? How is it rational or in any way responsible parenting when your kid is sick and on the verge of death and some guy says, go, he's going to be fine, to believe that based on what? This is not water and wine where he can see. This is something different. I want to say that the belief that this man has is entirely rational and makes good sense. But to understand that, we've got to do a little bit of work. Can we do some work together? Are you out there? Hello? Yeah, let's go. All right, so this is a word Don't be intimidated by it if you haven't heard it before. I didn't hear this word for the first 23 years of my life, and I'm so glad I heard it a number of years ago, too many years ago. The word is epistemology. You kind of got to digest it like a big tablet, right? Epistemology is more complicated than it sounds. Epistemology, sorry, less complicated than it sounds. Let's see if I can make it less complicated than it sounds. Epistemology is the study of how we know stuff. You might go, I just know. Do you just know? How do you know? My children are my favorite people in the world at doing epistemological studies. So a couple of weeks ago, we were really blessed, got to go and see a show directed by our very own Justin Fitzgerald, The Wizard of Oz. Yeah, woohoo! It's fine to do shout-outs and you can cheer him. We went along to The Wizard of Oz, and as you know, hope this doesn't spoil it for anybody, the Wicked Witch of the West, yeah, she doesn't make it. Dorothy chucks water on her and she's all like, I'm melting, and she melts. My daughter looks at me because as she grows and her brain develops and she's a clever girl, she's starting to test her epistemology. She says to me, Daddy, is she really dead? Did she really melt? I'm like, yeah, you saw her, she really melt. So the student's dead? No, the student's not dead. So what happened? What's happening right now is Mia's eyes are teaching her something. Her epistemology is what you might call foundationalism. She sees something and she builds a truth based on the blocks of what she sees. But there's a problem for Mia. She's getting cleverer. She at this point goes, my epistemic grid is just not working, Daddy. Her eyes are telling her that based on this model of knowing, she should now declare, because of the outstanding visual effects, that a high school student just died. But there's something else affecting her knowledge. She knows her dad. She thinks, Dad doesn't normally take me to things where kids get killed. And so in her understanding, her foundationalism is not working. You know why? Because foundationalism doesn't work. She starts to build what you might think of like a spider's web. This becomes her grid where she says, I see a person who was once standing there is now not standing there and was declaring, I'm melting. But my daddy doesn't bring me to horrific things where kids get killed. Where can I find another piece of knowledge or some more data to build a web of truth that I might come to a good conclusion? She asks for testimony. Daddy, is that child really dead? No. The kid's just under the stage. It's a show. The character is dead. Ding dong, the Wicked Witch is dead. Happy day, the child is not. And so Mia takes what she's seen, and now she's got a much better grasp on truth and understanding. There's a funny thing that we do to ourselves these days when we start to talk about God and faith in Jesus, and that is push ourselves or allow ourselves to be pushed into a foundationalist grid. I'll believe it if I can see it. The truth is, a lot of people saw it and they didn't believe it. The truth is, as Mia will tell you, sometimes you see things, but you're going to need more data to form a web of truth and knowledge. And the real truth is, just like so many things you do in life, there are many ways to know without seeing. Knowledge, belief, can be done at a distance. With no sacrifice of the truth or knowledge. We build a web of knowledge and we pull things together. This is how Google works. Okay, remember when we were all in primary school, before the internet, and you had to do a school assignment? So either in your house or your neighbor's house, there was the World Book Encyclopedia or Funkin' Wagnalls. And you'd go and you'd look something up, and this book was the authority that told you, even though it did have a bibliography. So even World Book knew that foundationalism is not the way we know stuff. Today, You might punch something into Google because Google knows everything. But Google doesn't know everything. Google is famous as a search engine. Google says to you, you can gain knowledge and truth by investigating that bit, 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 and that bit. Bring them all together and you're going to have a pretty sound picture. And that's how knowledge works. That's how truth works. That's how you got to church this morning. You made a decision to come here in this room. Unless you have a crystal ball, you could not see that everybody else was going to be here at 10 o'clock. But you believed the promise that we'd be meeting together. And so you put your faith in that promise and you jumped in your car. You didn't even know if the sermon was going to be any good. And you're still making up your mind about that. But believing testimony and hoping against hope that the talk will be all right, you jumped in your car, which most of you have no understanding of how it works. You haven't actually seen your brake caliper grasp the disc and stop the car, but you just believe it will happen. You drove along the road with drivers you don't know, but you trust that our state's licensing system and our police force make our roads safe so that you could enter into this vehicular relationship with others and travel here. You see how your epistemology looks more like a web. You pull a whole bunch of things together, and when we understand that, we come to a place where we can see that belief can be done at a distance. How does this man come to believe, this royal official who will believe from a distance? It starts with testimony. I'm going to read from verse 45, which is earlier than what we heard, but let me pick it up for you. When Jesus arrived in Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him, and they had seen all he had done in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, for they also had been there. Now, we don't get any indication in this story that the royal official had seen Jesus do anything before, but the royal official is in a place with others who had. He's among eyewitnesses, just as John, who writes this biography, was an eyewitness. Jesus comes amongst them, the royal official comes amongst them, and he's got this problem of a sick son. Why does he go to Jesus? Because he hears a testimony about Jesus. He hears all the people of Galilee going, you should see this dude. Heals people. Changes water into wine. Does amazing things. And so there's a testimony, a reputation. Well, because this man, like all of us, actually draws on more than just his eyes for belief. Okay. Maybe I should approach Jesus. And so he does. He approaches Jesus. And when he meets Jesus, Jesus doesn't say, here, look in my crystal ball. Here's a picture of your son healed. He makes a promise. And our promises are things that we've been hurt by and things that we've been thrilled by, because sometimes people make false promises, but that doesn't mean every promise is false. Jesus, a man of good standing, of strong reputation, and who has always backed up what he says, makes a promise. Go home, your son is well. Another string to the web, this man says, reputation is good, testimony is good. He's now made me a promise that I can relax in this. Maybe one part of his web is risk analysis, where he goes, I could stay here and my son dies, or I could believe and maybe he'll live. That's part of it. That's how we make decisions of belief. Sometimes we work out what is the least risky outcome. So here's the promise. He hears what you might call an argument from Jesus, or a conversation with Jesus, where Jesus says, unless you people see signs and miracles, you won't believe. Jesus is essentially saying, you don't realize that I'm here amongst you, heaven meeting earth, bigger than the miracles and signs. You can trust me. Jesus offers a personal endorsement of himself. Look at what I've done. Don't be so simplistic that you'll always need a sign. Hear the testimony of the people. There's reason to believe. And the man's persuaded. By argument, there's reason to believe. And then the man goes. Now, to get home is about, it's just over 20 kilometers from Cana back to Capernaum, where his son is. So he leaves, he takes Jesus at his word, and as he's going home, which is going to be an overnight trip, he has some servants who have been with his son who have left, and they meet halfway. Now, here's the really cool thing in this. By the end of this story, this man and his whole household, what does it say? Put their faith in Jesus. His faith goes from maybe he can help to I'll believe him at his word to everything I am and everything I will be, I surrender to him. That comes before he sees a thing. Because when he comes, he meets the servants and they testify, your son is well. The Bible doesn't say he went home, saw, examined his son's vital signs, and now that he had seen, because that's the only way to know anything, he put his faith in Jesus. No, by the confirming testimony of those who had seen, he makes a decision to trust Jesus and shows us how belief at a distance is very possible. And belief at a distance is very rational. I have never seen Jesus, but I would be here a long time, longer than I'm allowed to preach, if I told you all the reasons, some really good and robust, some a little bit flaky, for why I follow Jesus. But they all come together in a web in such a way that I can't do anything but follow Jesus as Lord. So this man who started at a distance has been able to put his faith in Jesus. But here's the cool thing that's going to happen. And here's the cool thing that happens with belief or faith. It grows. It progresses. It develops. Consider where he starts. Verse 47. When he first heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son who was close to death. Now, anyone who's a parent in the room knows that there's a level of faith that has happened already. Because when your child is sick, you don't mess about. Particularly when your child is on the brink of death, you're looking for something that can make a real difference. This man has heard that Jesus is a miracle worker. He may not know much about Jesus' identity at all, but he's heard of the power, and so he has a degree of faith. Please come and help. I want to entrust my son's welfare to you. He does not yet know Jesus. This is probably how I lived the first 18 years of my life. And maybe this is where you are at today. I can't remember a day. I've never been an atheist. I've always been someone who believed there is a God. And I've always figured that God must be bigger than me. And that God's powerful. And it'd be really great if he showed some of that power. But the world and creation and stuff like that looked pretty good. So obviously he was big, strong and powerful. And so there was a level of belief, but no relationship. Maybe that's where you're at today. Maybe you've come this morning and you believe there is a God. You believe he is real, but you just don't know him yet. Would it make sense if I suggested to you that that would be a sad way to live out your days? To have an awareness that there is a God, that he could be fantastic, that he could be terrible, and to never know. What about if you made a decision today to actually invest in taking your knowledge and your truth and your understanding of God the next step further? When you came in and you sat down, you should have found one of these cards. I want to suggest to you, if you're someone here today and you believe that there is a God, but you just don't quite know what he's like, why don't you do yourself a favor and tick the box on this. It's three boxes down, four boxes down that says, I still have questions. Why not take the step of bringing in a next line into your web of truth and ask the questions you need to ask? You can do this in a number of different ways. It can be text questions. Myself or someone else can get together with you and we can have coffee and talk through all the questions, and it doesn't have to be fixed in 1 hour. Or as you see on the back of the card, you might want to come along to Christianity Explained, where you can ask all the questions in the world and make up your own mind. But can I suggest to you that it doesn't make a lot of sense to know there is a God, to believe he is powerful, to hear that maybe there's a relationship available with him and it could be good, but leave it at that. The wonderful news in this passage is that's not where it stays for this man. His belief progresses, and I wonder if yours will too. He starts with understanding there is power, and so he asks some questions and investigates and asks Jesus to heal. Here's where it gets real for this man. This man then says to Jesus, go on your way. Your son has been made well. And the man took Jesus at his word and departed. Now that's a big call. That's a significant step of faith. This man believed Jesus' promise to preserve the life of his son, He trusted in that promise. He took a step, a significant step of faith, which means he had to leave other things behind to trust Jesus and go. And I'm wondering today if maybe you're here and likewise you've heard a little bit about Jesus now and you know who he is. And the only thing remaining now is to say, all right, I will trust him. I will surrender my life to him. And I'll believe that he is Lord of my life and he has good things. See, this man got a word from Jesus, your son is well. I can't offer you that same word. I can't say if you decide to follow Jesus today, when you leave, every problem will go away. Here's what Jesus does promise you. Just as he promised this man that he would preserve his son's life, he promises you that today, if you put your trust in him, he will reserve your life. What Jesus is saying is all who come to him and trust in him receive the gift of eternal life. Now that means when your life on this earth ends and you stand before a holy God, he will welcome you into his kingdom and you will live in eternity forever. That is Jesus' word to you. That is Jesus' word of promise. Jesus also promises that in him, if you meet Jesus, you have met God. So if you're thinking, yeah, I've always heard about this God, and I wonder what he's like, meet Jesus and you will know what he is like. And Jesus promises, and John records this in chapter 1, verse 12, that to all who believe in him, he gives the right to be called the children of God, to be counted as one of God's own, and to call God Father and good Father, and to be able to sing the things we sang earlier today about acceptance and being welcomed in. And I wonder if maybe today there is nothing left to do except to say, I see Jesus and I want to follow him now. And if that is you, praise God, I want you to take your card and I want you to tick the box that says, I'd like to start a relationship with Jesus. And if that is your box, then heaven celebrates and this church celebrates. You got to tick that one. Finally, for this man, Jesus says go and he goes. Then the father realized that this was the exact time at which Jesus had said to him, your son will live. So as the servants come, they're like, yeah, he's alive. When did he come back to good? At about 1 o'clock. Wow, that's when Jesus said he would come. And what happens? He and his whole household believed. Let me give you the summary of he and his whole household. This is his past, his present, his future. Everything he is and everything he ever will be is now surrendered to Jesus Christ, Lord and God. His son, who was dying, who now lives, who will take care of him in his old age, he gives his son to Jesus. His family's reputation. Remember Christianity, there aren't churches on every corner. He and his family become the oddballs who follow that new weird rabbi. His finances, his time, his everything is now surrendered. He and his whole household belong to Jesus. And I wonder if today, as your faith, your belief progresses, maybe you know Jesus, but at times he has called for all of you and you've gone, I'm not ready, and you've started to drift away from him. Maybe today is the day to say, you know what, the drifting is over. It's time to give my whole self to him and restart this relationship. And you can do that. You can indicate that by ticking the box that says, I'd like to restart a relationship with Jesus. I suspect for a lot of people here, you're thinking, okay, none of those boxes are me. I have a relationship with Jesus. Wonderful. Praise God, you are a living miracle. But hear the words from John chapter 4. He and his whole household. Not saying go home and force some teenage son to believe Jesus if they don't already. But I am saying what Jesus calls for from you now is that you will surrender all that you have and all that you are and all that you ever hope to be to him and go where he calls. And do me a favor and tick the box that says, I have a relationship with Jesus. Maybe you're someone who says, you know what, none of that stuff is for me. And I'd say, please do me a favor and just tick the box that says, no thanks, not today. I want to thank you for listening And I want to invite you to continue to come to church over the next few weeks and continue to hear about the things Jesus does. Because I suspect you may in time be persuaded by this great God that our church serves. Regardless of which box you ticked, if it was one of those first four, I want to lead us in a prayer. And this is a prayer that is fine to pray if you're already a Christian, but this is a prayer that would be wonderful to pray for the first time today. If you have chosen to believe Jesus at his word and to receive all the gifts that he gives, and I want to lead you in this prayer. If this is not your prayer yet, then I'm going to ask you to respect those around you who do want to make it their prayer. And so would everybody please bow your head and close your eyes, because someone around you might need to make a significant decision right now and do some big business with God. Let me lead us in this prayer. Lord Jesus, I believe. I believe that you are the God of heaven who came to earth. I believe that you have given me the right to be called a child of God. I ask you to continue to grow me in my trust of you. Amen. If you prayed that prayer for the very first time, welcome to the family. God calls you his child and you can call him your dad. And it's a wonderful journey from here. If you prayed that after being away from God for a little while, welcome home. And if you prayed that as just a continuing affirmation of your relationship with Jesus, it's wonderful to be in this family with you. Thanks. Actually, what I neglected to say is, we have a presentation on the screen, and this, I talked about testimony today. This is Pam's story of how she has trusted Jesus and how her faith has continued to grow through different seasons as she's followed him. Please watch the screen.